The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Let me start with this. From an organizational point of view, we talk about players, we talk about coaches, we talk about you and the names that we sort of know. But can you explain what it means for an organization, people whose names we don't know? I saw people on the field last night that I haven't seen in a while. They work, I don't want to say it's the bowels, but they kind of work in the bowels of this whole thing. Tell me what that means to know that an organization feels this good today.
Oh, it's so rewarding, because the flip side of it is when the team's not playing well, you just, at least in my chair, you just have a ton of guilt because, you know, they don't have a choice but to trust you, you know. I mean, you're put in a position and, you know, if you don't do a good job and there's a bad product on the field, they can't do anything about it. But guess what? They have to show their face around town. They have to deal with their friends, their lives. You know, you work for a sports team. You're associated with that team. You know, as much as you'd like to say you separate it. I mean, I had other jobs. I worked at a bank before. No one viewed me when I worked at Royal Bank of Canada that, hey, I'm that RBC employee. I was Alex Anthopoulos. Well, you work for the Atlanta Hawks or the Falcons or the Braves. Whoever you are, you know, Mary Jones, you're that Braves employee, the Falcons employee, and you carry that with you. And if baseball operations isn't getting the job done, they have to deal. They have to answer questions on your behalf, and that isn't fair. So I do think there's a, you know, it's special to work for a sports team. And when, you know, and it's not, it's a way of life, right? The hours are very different and so on. You have to truly love it. You can work anywhere, and I get to work here. So when you finally have success and you finally have results, I mean, that's why we work here. I mean, it's not just a job. We work here because of the 26 guys on the field. So when there's finally success and you reach what everybody wants to achieve, it's amazing. And they all, and the fans feel great, the employees feel great. Impacting the community is the most rewarding thing that you can do in these jobs.
And by the way, it's an impact. It's a financial impact. It's an emotional impact. It's everybody wakes up tomorrow morning in a better mood. I don't know if you've been in a place long enough, but I've known some of the ushers who are here at this park going back to the other park for 20-plus years. And I'm going to tell you, I walked around last night, the fifth inning, sixth inning. I'm not a good sit person. I don't want to sit in a press box. You know, you can't pump a fist, or you can't, you know, sort of look at a guy that you kind of know and go, hey, you know, I hope it goes well tonight. But the ushers, like, that's a different kind of group, too, because I'm going to tell you something, Alex. At the top of every section last night, these people were living and dying with every pitch. And that doesn't happen if you're just doing the job. That means you're emotionally invested in something that you show up to 81 nights a year.
I totally agree, and that's, look, and that's media as well. I know obviously you guys have to be objective and stuff, but even, you know, people that cover the team day in, day out, travel, you know, they want to see, it's a lot more fun. I'm sure everyone doing their job when the team's competitive, and everyone for the most part lives here, and there's a sense of community, and you're right. I mean, you know, when you, you know, everyone tells, you know, the thing that's the most awkward to me is what, when a Braves employee tells me congratulations, and I don't say it this way, but I just say congratulations to you. You know, like I still we're on the same team. You know, like we're not, this isn't me, and you know, you're equally as part of this. No matter what you do, you make this machine run. So yeah, we all have a role, we all have a job, but congratulate. You know, we're all part of the we. And, you know, or I get some employees that I'm walking through the concourse or something or stadium operations saying, thank you. You know, no, thank you. You know, you're the guys are the ones that getting everything ready. And even when we're celebrating out on the field, it's always big to me. Even when I was in Toronto, you know, if I can, the grounds crew are out there and they're just sitting there and everyone's celebrating and they're just kind of stoic standing and they're just observing. And I'll go grab them some hats. And, you know, it's like, you guys are part of this. You're grinding it out when it's hot, when rain delays and all this kind of stuff. You know, they live through all this stuff with us, and they have a role, and they should be enjoying it, celebrating it the same way. When people say thank you, not that it's an ego trip by any stretch, but to me it's like, wow, this really impacted someone's life and their mood. And you know, we had friends / you know, people that lived in the neighborhood today that they dropped off like a box of donuts on our front door. And hey, look, it could have been anything, but it was the thought that there was a note written that said, thank you so much for this year. And it could have been a lump of coal as far as I was concerned, but just to do something like that on a Sunday morning and for that to just be dropped off, that, you know, for somebody to say something like that, like what happened and what was done with the Braves and how that impacted us. And, you know, these are just, you know, really good people, and I'm sure there's other people that felt that way that were excited. That's a really amazing feeling and rewarding feeling that, you know, like there's joy today from so many people in Atlanta and the South, players, employees across the board. It's a, that's what makes sports great.
I will ask you about specific baseball stuff in a second, but I want to lead into the baseball stuff because I don't think this is a small thing. I'm going to make a statement, then I'm going to ask you a question. There are bars that are set. There's bars that are set by a manager, by a coaching staff, by front office people. There are bars that are set. I think there's a cultural bar that I don't think people talk about enough. I think we talk about performance bars. My statement is this organization needed a cultural bar kickup. And I'll ask you, why is it important for you to ask somebody how they're doing today, how their family is, to understand that you don't want to be in the room with the players and you don't want to be in the room with everybody that works sort of beneath you in that same place as you, that part of the building. But why is it important to make sure that those questions are sincerely asked in an organization, any organization, but certainly in a sports organization?
You know, I think it's just, if you work in sports, it's tough no matter what job you have. We play at night, especially in our sport. We play at night. We play almost every day. When the team goes on the road, most people are going to watch as well. That's 3 to 4 hours. And you just, you know, and I'd say the majority of people, their lives revolve around the team. And there are so many sacrifices, and there's just a common bond that we all go through no matter what your role is. We all are kind of under the same calendar, right? The Braves play at a certain time, and whether we're at home or we're on the road, and that's the one thing we all have in common. We might have events, weddings, kids' birthdays, all that kind of stuff. People want to go up to the lake or whatever, but it revolves around the Braves, and we're all tied in, and we all care, and it means that much to us. And we know that it's a sacrifice and it's a grind. So, you know, from that standpoint, I think there's always going to be a connection for the employees that work here because we all know what we go through because we love to do it.
Here's my statement. It is much better now. I'm just telling you that there is a sense, and I think it's an appreciation that it comes from a good place. And I don't think that's a bad place to start before you throw pitch one in April, before you actually take one swing, to know that, again, if you know players talk about the rope being pulled in the same direction. I do think that the cultural bar has really been raised around here. So I will say congratulations to you and your people in the organization for doing that, because I do think it matters over the course of a long season. All right, now baseball. Roster construction. What are the real things that you guys talk about when you try to figure out what the 26 is going to look like based upon what it is you have and then based upon who the opponent is?
Well, you focus on the opponent first. So you have to just, you focus on the opponent first and what will play. So Terrence Gore was a part of the roster for the DS because we just felt with the way the Brewers lined up against us, the speed element could factor. So maybe you think guys are slow to the plate on the mound and you might have an opportunity to steal a base. Maybe you think there's a potential for a wild pitch, pass balls, things like that. Maybe blocking is not at an elite level and you think you might be able to take an extra base. Now, part of it is what your options are as well. And, you know, the most critical part is, you know, it's nice to talk about it, but what will Snit actually do in game? What is he comfortable doing, right? So we could talk about all kinds of things and scenarios, but it always comes back to Snit. Okay, as much as this might make sense intellectually, I mean, we could have a conversation with Snit. Will you see yourself doing X? And if he's like, no, I just don't have the comfort. I'm not comfortable. I'm not going to hit for, I don't see myself hitting for so-and-so. I don't see myself running for so-and-so. I don't want to take the bat out of the lineup. You know, I don't see using this right-handed reliever against this part of the lineup. Yeah, it might make sense, but, you know, there's an element of feel, right? So, you can say a lineup is poor against sliders or curveballs, but if someone's not throwing the ball well or they're hanging their slider, hanging their curveball consistently, maybe that's not the right guy, and that player isn't going to be used. So I think the first part is you really examine the roster, and you try to see strengths, weaknesses, and so on. And then from there, when you identify some of those things, you start looking at the guys you have, and you look at, okay, are there guys that could line up here somewhat? And, you know, obviously Tyler Matzik was great. I think he would have been great against anybody. But by design, he was going to face the top of the L.A. lineup as often as we could. I mean, that was game planned. That's a really tough part of the lineup, and we thought he profiled really well against, you know, Seager and Betts, and those guys are elite players. But, you know, that's just kind of – that was some of the thought there, and, you know, Snit did a great job the entire series.
So how much does ballpark ever come into play? How much does – I don't know. You called it the circle of trust. And guys can, I'm assuming, walk in and out of the circle of trust. You can be in it, you can be out of it. Luke Jackson didn't have a good couple of nights. And, look, I'm going to be very honest. Being in the building, I saw some of it. When he got to the bench, he looked distraught. Now, I will say, talking to him at the end of the game last night, he wasn't down on himself. He was just disappointed that the plan now had to be altered. He let the team down in that regard. So I felt better about him saying it wasn't about him wallowing. But it was a visual that a lot of people were asking me about this morning. So when you talk about that circle of trust, how does it actually work? Because I'm assuming that's more of a bullpen thing than anything else, right?
Oh, 100%. It's definitely a bullpen. And it definitely changes. Guys go in and out. So going into the Brewers series, A.J. Minter had been up and down, obviously, over the course of the year, been optioned, came back. Didn't throw a ton of meaningful innings down the stretch those last 6 weeks or so. But he wasn't going to jump out into a big-time role at the outset in that Brewers series. But once he got his opportunity, we were going to find out. We wasn't lost on us how good he was in the postseason in 2020. And obviously, even in that 60-game season, he pitched really well. But, you know, was there going to be an element of once you get to the postseason, is AJ going to show up the way he did before? So he had that one outing against the Brewers that he looked fantastic, and boom, he jumped right in there because of how good he looked. And then he continued to get opportunities here, and he's elevated himself. There's no doubt about it with what he's done. Luke, prior to these outings against L.A., had thrown the ball exceptionally well. A big part of the reason that we got here was fantastic in the Brewers series. You know, if you look at the L.A. team, the guys that got him were the same guys in the lineup, you know, and it was that right-handed run, but you're looking at guys like Taylor, Pollock, Bellinger. He just had a rough go against those guys, just like sometimes a hitter will have a rough go against certain guys on the mound. So right, wrong, or indifferent, it didn't line up for him. Maybe you guys saw him well. I mean, you can look at a million things, right? They sat on a pitch. Maybe he tipped something. There's no way to know. We don't have any answers right now, but in that Milwaukee series, he was really, really good. He threw the ball really well, and he was huge for us. So I think once you start a new series, you're starting from scratch, and you're taking the body of work with Luke. It's a new team. It's a new opponent, and we feel really good about him. So no doubt, he's obviously, he didn't want to perform, you know, it didn't go the way he wanted to or we wanted it to, but like anything else, he picked it, you know, we picked him up, as, you know, the players did, and he's done that to other guys as well when he's gotten them out of jams.
I'm going to ask you about Matzik in a second, but do we not think about bullpen guys in the light that we think about hitters? Sometimes you get hot, sometimes you get cold, sometimes it's a good matchup over a, I don't know, six-game, two-team series. Are we just sort of really reactionary as opposed to the way that we talk about hitters?
I mean, look, it's results-based, right? So I know there was, I heard it, you know, Will Smith, this and that. Will Smith has had a tremendous playoffs for us. He's been really good. And I think the biggest thing with Will is he's had a lot more rest. First half of the season, Will was pretty sharp. He did a nice job. Second half, he started having, you know, more bumps in the road and so on. But, and again, this is not a knock. This was just every game mattered. He was up practically every day. And that's not an exaggeration. He literally was up almost every day, 6, 7, 8 days in a row. That's very, and again, he didn't complain. He took the ball. He did it. He got the job done. But his stuff is better. He's sharper because we're able to get him some rest now in the playoffs. You know, we just didn't have, we were competitive. We were winning games. We had leads a lot during the season. They were playoff games the entire way. So, you know, I do think, you know, being able to put guys in a position to succeed, pockets of the lineup, you know, we were pretty confident that, if Corey Knebel was, they were going to try to line him up with Jorge Soler and throw a lot of curveballs to him. Or when Joe Kelly started that game, we had pretty good idea before the game that the reason Kelly's starting maybe over Knebel with Albies and Rosario up at the top is try to throw a lot more changeups. So, again, you can't guarantee that, but you can look at anything and think, okay, what's the best pitch to attack a certain guy with? And that doesn't mean it's going to work. But I think you try to line those things up. If someone's susceptible to curveballs, you'll throw curveballs or sliders or four-seamers up or down or balls in or out. So I do think in the postseason you could line things up a little bit more. During the season, it's not necessarily the same thing because you're playing 7 in a row, 5 in a row, 10 in a row, and some guys may not be available on a certain day. And you need to make sure you don't wear them down because you may have another month to play, 2 months to play.
Well, the crazy part, though, is like Kiki Hernandez. There was nobody on the planet better. As a matter of fact, he went through a stretch where, literally, I haven't seen much better. And then it slows down. I just don't think we give pitchers that benefit of saying, you know, sometimes it just goes a little bit off. Sometimes it is a streaky world. And I know that it's results-oriented because you're either saving a game or you're blowing a game, even in the sixth, seventh inning. But I just think that we don't think of pitchers that way, as in that, you know, the way that hitters can go up and down over the course of, again, 3, 6, 10 games. You can get hot, but you can also at times just not be that. We don't seem to give pitchers that sort of a little bit of leeway, that little bit of wiggle room. We're talking about, you know, what just happened to him now.
Well, I think the big thing is, imagine if I told you that a hitter would only come into the game with bases loaded, two outs, and you're down a run. And that's when they'd always come into the game, and you wanted them to come through or not. That's when you start, you know, but overall they have 4 at-bats, things happen and so on. You know, you come in as a reliever, you're up 5 runs, you have a scoreless inning, you feel great. Look, you don't hear about the guys that we were down a few runs, came in, they gave up a run. There's no angst about that. But those jobs are so difficult because they are being put into such difficult positions. You're 6 outs away, 9 outs away, you got a 1-run lead, you got a tie game. The leverage and the importance of it is so incredibly important, right? So the magnitude of it, I mean, is so important. So I think just by nature of what the job entails, it's always going to be that way for the late inning guy.
Matzik's story, have you ever, I mean, you've scouted, you've watched guys try to come back. Is there anything that you recall that's anywhere close to this guy that he's done?
No, I mean, I've said it many times. Dana Brown, he's 100%, 180%, 5,000,000% of the reason that he's here with the Braves. I knew of Tyler Matzik in the past, completely lost track of him. Dana contacted me in the middle of August 2019, said, I really think we should sign this guy. I pushed back and said, look, we should sign a minor league deal. I pushed back. There's 2 weeks left in the minor league season in Gwinnett. I don't see the point to signing a guy when he's going to be a free agent in 2 weeks. And we got on the phone, and he just really pushed for it strongly. And I said, okay, well, if we're going to do this, let's give him a 2-year minor league deal so at least we have him for next year. And, you know, he came in, and we brought him over. He wasn't even invited to camp. He looked good before the COVID shutdown, really good. And then when we had the invitations again for the July camp, you know, Snit's the one who said, hey, why don't we invite that kid who came over at the first camp? You look good. Let's give him an invite and see how it looks. And, you know, from there, obviously he made the team and he didn't look back. But every year around the middle of August, you know, the last 2 years, I have that email saved. I forward it to Dana and I say, bump. And I said, this is unbelievable job by you. He was out at the area codes for the draft. You know, obviously Tyler's playing in the middle of nowhere, and he made sure to send some guys there. And, look, it's so easy to write those guys off. You go see a guy, track record and so on. And to call the GM and to push and really push, even when I push back, those are the type of things that you need. So as much as I'm sitting there doing the interviews and first saying, oh, team's playing great and all that kind of stuff, it's guys like Dana, guys like everyone else on our staff. Those are the guys that really make a difference in terms of trying to build this team.
All right, real quick, Eddie Rosario. Is this what makes baseball? We had a couple of guys on last week, Costas and a few other guys. Isn't this what makes baseball maybe? Look, I can say it. I don't know if you can. Baseball's the best because there are guys that come from beyond the left field wall. There's an opportunity. You know, everybody's 0-0. Nobody has numbers when the postseason starts. And you know, you can make an all-star team from April to September, but become legendary in October. Guys like him, it's crazy fun to watch guys sort of come out of nowhere. And he's not a nowhere guy. Like, that's insulting. He's played this game and played it at a high level. But to do it now in October, and to have a city rally around him the way they were chanting his name last night. That's what makes baseball different, I think, than every other sport.
No, I completely agree. And look, we traded for him. We got him back. You know, he could have been back in the middle of August. He hadn't played in a long time. So we asked him to just keep getting at-bats in the month of August, you know, and he just get every day at-bats. And we didn't have playing time for him. Soler was playing well. Jock was playing well. Team was playing well. So there was no guarantees we'd find him at-bats, and finally we activated him for the Giants series. But, you know, you look at what he did for us, and, you know, he ended up with 903 OPS, I think. I mean, he was awesome. And what he did in the month of September for us was huge. So many contributions. I mean, I know we won the division by 6.5 games. Felt like we won it by 1 or 2 just because that it came down to the last week against the Phillies. But like you said, he had a pretty good career. He's still a young guy leading up to this point. He had an unbelievable September, but it just kind of flew below the radar because he was late. And just like you said, but to do what he's done in the NLCS against an unbelievable team, you know, them and the Giants, two best teams in the NL and from a win total standpoint in the entire league. So it's incredible. I mean, and they have – I worked with LA. I mean, they are as prepared as you will come. And they will do all the work on you and find your holes, exploit your weaknesses. They have the players to get it done. They have guys who throw with tremendous stuff and command. And for him to go still do that with all those things working against him, knowing how prepared the other side is, and I can guarantee you they were relentless trying to find ways to attack him, that much more credit to him because he did it against quality arms and a quality advanced group too.
Two quick things, and I'll let you go. I know that free agency is looming. Can I ask, honestly, do you spend 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes of a day thinking about that stuff at this point, or is that literally as far back on a back burner as you can go?
Yeah, I'd probably say literally probably 3 to 5 minutes. Not a whole lot. I mean, it crosses my mind. You always have your eye a little bit going forward, but I literally it's 3 to 5 minutes. Not a whole lot. I don't think I've spent 10 or 15 or 20. Just, you know, in a small moments from time to time, you know, you're dealing with the task at hand right now. We have a advanced meeting and some calls and things like that we're going to do tonight. But, you know, you're always thinking about the roster going forward and things like that. And you look ahead a little bit to 22 no matter what. But, again, very, very short period. We are totally locked in on, obviously, you know, the next series and trying to win the whole thing.
Operations Crystal Ball time. Do you think the opener is a thing? Is it here? And I mean, can you really do it, sustain it over the course of a season? And do some teams have to, or other teams don't? Maybe that's a better question.
I mean, it is a thing, right? It's been going on for a while now. I think, look, if people have Max Fried and Charlie Morton and Ian Anderson, those guys are going to start, just like Scherzer and, you know, even Tampa last year with Blake Snell and Glasnow and Morton. Those guys were starting. So I think it's when you're in a position that you're just not sure and you know the lineup's a certain way and maybe you get 5 outs, 6 outs, and so on, and you're just trying to get a collection of outs. But, you know, to do it consistently for 30 starts, it's tough because you need the guys that you can option. You don't have off days the way you do in the playoffs. So it's challenging. You need to have the ability to move guys up and down from the majors, the minors. But look, we've done it. We did it in the NLCS. We did it during the year. You'd rather have guys that you know will take the ball and be starters for you, and you have a pretty good idea what you're going to get. But there's times it makes sense, and we won a playoff game with an opener against a really good team. So, but it's a credit to Chavez. It's a credit to Drew to really take down those really important innings for us.
How important is it to hear that this city is really enjoyed and taking this team in? I've really tried to go out of my way to tell some guys in the organization, coaches, players, that this is a very well-liked team. 28 years, this is not the most talented team I've ever seen wearing a Braves uniform. It really isn't. But I don't know if I've seen a team that's any more liked or appreciated than this bunch.
You know, that, for me, this is for me and Alex Anthopoulos, just not a – that's really meaningful for me. And for me, because I didn't consider those things as a young GM. And I didn't consider it until end of 2014, going into 2015 season, that off season. I really made a focus on wanting to have a team that the community would like and embrace. And, of course, winning is the number one component to that. But I do think you can have a winning team with just a bunch of individuals that you don't really like that much and, you know, the community doesn't attach themselves to and connect to. And I think you can look at it two ways. And I had a conversation with someone in the middle of 2014, and this really impacted me in that offseason. You know, how do you want to win? You want to win at all costs, or you want to win a certain way with a certain group? And I know it sounds Pollyannish and kind of corny, but I believe in, you know, wanting to win with a certain group, and I think it's sweeter and it's that much more enjoyable. And I do believe when you witness it, and I witnessed it in Toronto, and I've witnessed it here, I think all the years that I've been here, look, we haven't won the World Series, obviously, but I think we've had teams that people really enjoy. They identify with some of the players. They latch onto them. It's a fun team. And that's important to me. You know, and don't get me wrong, winning a World Series is clearly the most important thing, but along the way, we'd like to do it with a group that people can connect with. And, you know, when I got here, I'd been a GM in Toronto for 6 years. I was in LA for 2 years. I was at a point in my career that I wasn't working in baseball because of the paycheck or trying to climb or anything like that. I felt like I was in a place in my career that I there wasn't anything else I felt like I had an urge to do, obviously, other than win a World Series. But, you know, I'm Canadian. I go to LA. I come to Atlanta. The goal wasn't just, hey, I need a job, I got to work and move my family. You know, you have a chance to impact a community, and sports has a chance to impact a community. And, you know, that's what the challenges with these jobs are. And that's what's the most exciting part about it is you want to come here. And you don't know how long you're going to be in a city and in a community, but you want to feel good that you're impacting a community in that way. And I don't think you can realize it or appreciate it as a GM until you've experienced it. And I think once you've gotten a taste, I don't think you'll ever go any other way than trying to build a team like that.
Look, you know the deal. There are off-the-record conversations. But players publicly will talk about how great the clubhouse is, no matter what it is. When you talk to coaches, though, and I've heard, when I hear, we don't have a turd in a bunch. You know, that we don't have a problem around here. And I've heard the opposite of that, to tell you the truth, from guys in different organizations. That's to me, when a coaching staff says that off to the side, and they want you to know that this works in part because there's not a turd around here, that's a big thing after you've been around the game for a long time.
No, there's no doubt. And again, as a young GM, I just kind of ignored it. Turd, but he's on a good contract, or really productive, or, you know, we have him under control for so many periods. And I didn't really understand it, and I said this before, my first 4 years as a GM, I was just collecting talent. Just, you're talented, let's go. And I don't want to call any players out specifically, but I didn't even think about building a team. And I think there's a very significant difference between collecting talent and building a team. And building a team for me is, how do the pieces work? How do they fit together? And I know we're not the NFL or the NBA where, you know, baseball is a much more individual sport overall, but I do think there are components that players can make other players a lot better. And you can play as a team. And when you go down to that clubhouse, and I've been down to the clubhouse with teams that I just didn't love the makeup and the mix and the character, you just don't want to be down there. You feel it when you walk in the door. You know you're making life harder for the support staff, for the clubhouse staff, for the grounds crew, for the coaches. And as a GM, there's an element of guilt because I don't have to live down there every day. I'm down there, I can get out and go back to my office. They have to live with these people and travel with these people and the support staff. And there's an element of guilt when you basically know you're putting those people in there, and it's not a fun place to come to work each day for how long we're doing this. But the flip side of that is when you walk down there and you see how connected and how much everyone enjoys being around each other, it's a really incredible feeling, and it's fun to be around. And I do believe you need talent, of course. It absolutely translates the wins, whether that's 1, 2, 3, 5, I don't know. But it translates the wins, and also it's just a better environment to be in. And I think you get more work product out of every single person. And for anybody that works in an office environment or whatever they might be doing, just think about if you don't like the people you work with day in and out, you're not going to be real happy coming into work. And if the flip side of it is that you love the people you work with and you enjoy it, how much more productive are you going to be, and how much better of an environment it's going to be? It's really as simple as that.
Yeah, I talked to Ron Washington on the field, and I asked him about that word love. He's maybe the oldest guy in and around the organization. He says, yeah, you better be able to use that word. You better mean it. But if you have it in this sport, then you have something else. Last thing, the buzz before the game last night, and I've been where the shoe is going to drop. The safe is going to fall out of the 10th floor. It's not good energy. It's pessimistic energy. And when you lose game 5, quite honestly, social media, and we start to get that feeling around here. But I will say, hours before the game yesterday, I didn't feel any of that. I felt the right kind of energy. I again, maybe it's because of affinity for this team. Maybe they thought, hey, you know what? Grinding could win one of the next two games, whether it was Saturday or Sunday. But I'm telling you, here's the difference. I felt much, much less of on game day. You know, facing a game as big as you guys did, you know, and had yesterday, I felt much less of that negative stuff. And I thought maybe that was the best sign going into the building. You know, it was palpable that this was upbeat energy, that this was we're going to get it done tonight energy. And I'm going to be honest with you. There have been other times in this town where that wasn't the feeling. I kind of thought maybe yesterday walking in there that not that it's going to help you win the game necessarily, but it'll tell you what maybe this team means to the city, that there was this idea that, no, these guys are not them. Let's not blame them for stuff that's happened in the past.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I've been here 4 years, and, you know, 2018, no expectations. We made the postseason, happy to be there, you know, unbelievable, just felt like a successful year. We really didn't come close to being able to beat L.A. And 2019, I've told this story before, but, you know, when I'm new to a community, I want to explore and go to places and find out the Atlanta institutions. And my family, my wife's side of the family is still up in Toronto, so she'll take the kids in the summer and spend time with her grandparents and all the other aunts and uncles and so on. And I'm here in the summer a lot of times by myself, so I'll try to get out in the city. And I remember eating at the Colonnade about one night. I was told this is a great Atlanta institution, and I sat at the bar and I just kind of put my head down and no one knows who I am. And someone asked about the Braves game being on TV or about the Braves, and the lady behind the bar said, someone said, hey, the Braves are having a pretty good year, and we were in 2019. You know what? They lose every year in the first round of the playoffs. Like, I'm just not going to bother. I'm not even going to follow. And, you know, I'm not saying anything at the time, just eating my meal and stink, but I'm like, man, I want to change that. It really kills me to hear that. And I know I'm only in my second year at the time, but it kills me to hear that. And then we get there in 2019 and we lose again to the Cardinals. And you start thinking, man, you know, and you hear about it all the time, and I get it. And then finally, 2020, we broke through. And I remember telling Snit, we're never going to have to hear that again. Telling Freddie, got a big hit off of Amir Garrett, we're never going to have to hear that again. You know, then we blow 3-1 last year, and you hear about all the Atlanta curses and so on. And again, I wasn't born and raised here, but 4 years in, I've heard about it plenty, and I don't want to be associated with that. You know, it's pride, it's ego, whatever you want to call it, but, you know, we're not going to be that. That's not the Braves. That's not what we're going to be about. And that's not to take anything away from anybody else, but you want to break through. So, you know, you get to 3-1, you lose 3-2. Yeah, doubts start to creep in a little bit because you're hearing it, but it's a meaningful thing that we never have to hear about that again. We don't have to hear about the Braves haven't won a playoff series in forever. We don't have to hear about the Braves haven't been in the World Series in 20-plus years. I mean, all that stuff is gone now. You know, I don't say forever, but it's going to take a long time to get it back. It'll take a really long drought. So I'm proud of that. I'm proud of the fact that we got back to the playoffs. I'm proud of the fact that, you know, Atlanta hadn't hosted a CS game since 2001, and the Braves have won a ton. So to do that for this city, it's a good sports town, and seeing Trae Young supporting and Matt Ryan supporting and the sports teams coming together, that is awesome. And I think, you know, we all continue to get better as sports organizations. This is going to become, you know, one of the best sports towns across the United States.
Well, listen, culture and everything else, it really is in a different place now. So congratulations to you, your family. I don't think that's said enough for a lot of you guys who do the things where the family better be supporting it. And they know the business they've gotten into, but it doesn't mean it's not a long year. And congratulations to everybody in your immediate family, extended family, and certainly to the organization. We really appreciate it. I look forward to seeing you out in Houston. I really look forward to seeing this building get really rocking again this upcoming weekend. Thanks for the time, and we will catch up somewhere out in Texas.
Anytime, Chris. Really glad to do it.
Thanks, Alex. Really appreciate it.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right, you can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today, accentroofingservice.com.